Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today is a day that has special relevance in today's world. It's World Refugee Day, as decreed by the United Nations. St. Louis has traditionally welcomed refugees and immigrants, but given today's world refugee influx, our national political environment, and the uncertainties it's causing, we'll spend some time today taking stock of the refugee community here. Joining me in studio to take a closer look, Anna Crossland is president and CEO of the International Institute in St. Louis. Nadeem Ramich is a St. Louis attorney. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Return
Thank
engagements
you.
For everyone involved. Good to have you. Anna, let me start with you. What does World Refugee Day actually mean?
Well, World Refugee Day is a designation by the UN High Commission for Refugees, which is the organization within the United Nations which has responsibility for registration and of refugees worldwide and oversees the maintenance of a variety of refugee camps throughout the world as well. And it's a day in which we pause to recollect the growing number, in fact, of refugees and displaced people worldwide and the plight that they that they're in the midst of, but their resilience at the same time.
Nadeem, what does it mean to you? You've been here 18 or 19 years now from Bosnia.
18 years now, I think. Well, actually, I became a refugee on a very cold December night in 1992 when we were forced to flee our house in Bosnia because of the war in former Yugoslavia. And so our first stop as refugees was, after a month of travel, may I add, was Germany, where we spent 6.5 years. And then we came to the United States as refugees in 1999 because we could not go back to Bosnia. As at that time, there were still people living in our house. I guess the territory was still occupied.
But what does the day mean to you?
It reminds me of what I had to go through, and it just kind of reflect on all the world refugees that are suffering the same fate that I've gone through right now. And I think we're in the midst of the greatest refugee crisis that we've ever had. I mean, more than 65 million people are displaced right now, and they need help, and I think we need to help them.
And how is that impacting St. Louis, this whole thing? I imagine a good number still continue to get here, but many don't.
Well, you know, when Nadeem just mentioned the number 65 million, he's absolutely right. There are 65.5 million refugees and displaced people throughout the world right now. It's the largest crisis of displaced people since World War II. So it is really dramatic. It is really awful. And it has grown quickly. In fact, it has doubled. The population of individuals has doubled just in the last 4 years. And, you know, when you look at those kind of numbers, most of them are actually waiting in refugee camps or in countries nearby to their home country, hoping that the war will be settled and they'll be able to return home. The vast majority of them go home or end up living in the country in which they've fled on a permanent basis. For about 1% of the total population of refugees actually get a refugee resettlement offer to a country, including the United States. And then, you know, between 700, 800 of those individuals a year actually come to St. Louis. And so a very, very small number of the people actually arrive in St. Louis. In most of the populations, the reason they come is because they're defined as an especially vulnerable population. That means that they may have a medical problem in the family unit that needs to be solved. They can't remain in the camp because of the medical problem. They may be a part of a religious minority that even if war is settled over in their home country, they will not be able to return. And so there has to be a specific reason when they arrive over here. Last year, our numbers actually bulged slightly because of the change, significantly, in fact, about 40%, because of the change in the refugee admissions numbers under President Obama, where they went from 70,000 refugees a year in the United States, normally admitted, to 85,000. Mm-hmm. So we saw our number here in St. Louis then grow to 1,150 refugees, mm-hmm. which was the largest single-year arrival since the Bosnian arrivals in the late 1990s. 1990s. You know, and so we continue to welcome refugees. St. Louis has been a good place for them to settle. But once again now, because of changes in the administration, the numbers are back down again, in fact, below what we ordinarily settle, as opposed to up at the peaks that we saw last year.
Nadine, for purposes of clarification, what is the difference between a refugee, an immigrant, and someone seeking political asylum?
Refugees, so most refugees are forced from their homes. Basically, they flee because they're afraid that they're going to die. Some of those refugees may be seeking a political asylum because of the fact that they may be prosecuted back home. Even if there is no war going on, some of them may be in danger because of their religious status, national origin, et cetera. And so Most of the refugees, as I said again, they don't willingly leave their home. We never left willingly. We were forced to leave. Otherwise, our lives would have been in danger at that time.
Yeah. We refer to refugees as reluctant immigrants, where immigrants have family members, sometimes a job here in the United States, and it's an orderly planning process. They can pick up their high school diplomas, close their bank accounts, sell their homes, and move to the United States. In the case of refugees, it's like upheaval. It's immediate upheaval, and they're forced to flee at that point. And they many times flee with basically the clothes on their backs.
Is a refugee going to have an easier time coming to this country than someone just emigrating from a non-refugee from a Middle Eastern country?
Actually, people don't realize, and it's because I think refugees are in the news so frequently, but people don't realize that on an annual basis of the foreign-born admitted to the United States on a citizenship track, that really refugees are only about 10% of that number. So the vast majority of immigrants who come to the United States, as I said, are coming because of family reunification or because of an H-1B or a different kind of a visa at that point, coming to work with a corporation, et cetera. And so they, because of the long time that they've had to wait for many of those visas to actually be approved, it is not unheard of for immigrants, the general immigrant population, even though they've applied and everything else, to wait 9, 10, 15 years to be able to actually come to the United States versus refugees who are in the midst of an upheaval, may or may not come, mostly not come because, as I said, only 1% are admitted from the world. But that process itself is shortened. The process itself, including the vetting steps, runs usually about 18 to 24 months.
That's a good long wait.
Yeah.
And in conditions that aren't the best, needless to say.
Well, and if there are health conditions, et cetera, then 18 to 24 months can actually be a death certificate for somebody in the family unit if there's cancer, something like that. But they do not sidestep the vetting steps, which Americans feel, and are rightly so, feel are so important to ensure that the right refugees are being admitted, those that have been vetted already.
Nadine, what do you make of what appears to be a significant national mood, an unwelcoming mood in the country today for so many refugees and immigrants both? In your community, what is the feeling about that?
It's sad because you've got to start from the point that most of us did not, when we left our homes, we didn't think, first of all, that some of us would end up in the United States. And we were kind of forced to come here. So when we first came to the United States, and I think this, what I want to go back to is, you don't know what you have until you lose it. And why do I say that? Because a lot of refugees, a lot of immigrants that come to the United States, they probably value the freedoms that we have in the United States more than the natural born here. Why? Because they're just born with it. They don't know nothing else. Refugees, immigrants, they've lost all of that stuff. They value it even more. They love this country more than anything, as I do. And so when the feelings kind of flared up and a lot of people were so anti-refugees, anti-immigrants, it's hard to digest. because the numbers also speak from a logical standpoint that refugee and immigrant populations in a certain area will actually increase the economic benefits to that area. So everybody benefits.
You know, I don't think there's any question about that, and I think that's been proven here in St. Louis. We have the Mosaic Project, for instance, which most people are familiar with and which they're really trying to bring in many more by 2020 because of the fact they do create jobs and business opportunities.
Well, and there's a new study, in fact, out just in the last week by the New American Economy, which looks at numbers having to do with one of the big accusations about refugees that they take a lot of federal dollars, you know, when they first arrive, and what they've done is they've looked at economic impact numbers over a period of years, and they find that that refugees actually give back far more in terms of robustness of the economy than those dollars they use initially.
What sort of perks is the first one that comes to mind from the government. When a refugee comes here, a lot of people are concerned that they're put on Social Security right away and that they are being on the government dole and that they're taking money that might ordinarily go to somebody who's been here a lot longer.
Yeah. You know, there are all these myths, and one of the myths is that refugees get hundreds of thousands of dollars or maybe at least $50,000 or $75,000 each when they first arrive. The reality is that the resettlement allowance is $1,025 per refugee. And so a family of four gets, $4,200, $4,400, somewhere in that range. And out of that, we have to guarantee 3 months' rent and security deposit. Oops, it's just about gone. Mm-hmm. But also then their food and their transportation and their utilities. And it doesn't last very long. And so the reality is that they receive some subsidization at rates that are similar to the rates for Missouri TANF. And so that's like $300 a month for a family of four. They receive those benefits up till 8 months after arrival in the United States. And if they're not working after 8 months, then, as you know, it's kind of like they have to depend on the kindness of strangers at that point because there's simply no other subsidization. So this idea that refugees can go on the dole, that the dole is, number one, all that luxurious, and that, number three, that it's there forever is simply not true.
And during these 8 months, they're learning English as well.
They're studying English, and within 6 months after arrival, 70% of our family units have at least one working member. So this is not a case where they're waiting till 8 months and 1 day to go to work either. This is like as soon as the job becomes available, they're going into it regardless of their level of English, whether they own a car, whether they figured out how to get around the community or not, they go to work, and they go to work quickly.
I have to take a break, but I want to ask Nadim, how important was that stipend, if I may put it that way, to you and your family when you came here?
It was important, but what was more important when we first arrived is the fact that we had the International Institute and a Crossland to help us. I mean, you've got to imagine as a refugee going to a foreign country, if you don't have anybody there, I mean, how are you going to function? So that's where the International Institute comes in. They help you. They connect you to your employers. They connect you with schools. They connect you with social services if needs be. And they kind of set you up in those first 3 to 6 to 8 months. And then most people, as Anna just said, they find work and they continue functioning as an integral part of the society.
I would just suggest to anybody listening now what they might feel like going to a strange country, not speaking a language, not having a job, and suddenly being plopped down in the middle of a foreign country and having to exist. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. This is World Refugee Day, and that's what we're talking about. It, and we're trying to get a handle on what the refugee situation and life for refugees and immigrants is like here in the St. Louis area. We'll come back in a moment and continue our conversation with Anna Crossland from the International Institute and Nadim Ramic, who is a St. Louis attorney and who came to this country almost 20 years ago from Bosnia. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our discussion about refugees with Anna Crossland of the International Institute and Nadim Ramich, a St. Louis attorney and a gentleman who came to this country almost 20 years ago from Bosnia. I want to take a call before we continue our conversation from Jay in St. Louis, who has a very basic question, it appears to me. Jay, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, folks, I'm not totally opposed to this, but I would want to know, why don't these folks stay in their own country and improve their own country? And I guess there is a little bit of selfish thing. I look at the highways and the highway jams and the traffic, and I think, wow, I sure liked it when my dad was taking me to high school in 68. Back then, he even complained about how the traffic is. I don't really want to live elbow to elbow with everybody in the world. And frankly, you know, we don't need manifest destiny anymore.
All right.
The West is settled.
Jay, we got you. Thanks so much for the question. I think we probably have two answers to that.
Well, I think, you know, there are many, many different answers to that. I think one of them, just the question of crowds in St. Louis. I think if you look at the demographics, in 1950, we had 850,000 people in the city of St. Louis, and today we have 313,000 people. And so we do actually need more population. We would benefit from having more population of individuals to buy our goods and services that are here. Even the county of St. Louis County right now lost population in the last census. And so both the city and the county have an issue, have a variety of economic issues that are associated with economic downturn because of population loss. The second issue then has to do with why individuals can't stay overseas. And we have to remember in the case of refugees that we're talking about people who have no home overseas. It's not a question of choosing to stay in their country or coming to the United States. They have been forced to flee. And the ones who have come forward, the 1% that have come forward at that point, are people, as I said, who have specific, very vulnerable situations where they simply can't remain in the camps. In the end, yes, if all things were equal, they'd like to go home, but they simply can't.
Would you go home, Nadim?
I would, but right now my home was kind of damaged in the war as well, a little bit, not as bad as others. And it comes, you know, the first part of his question is, you know, this overpopulation. As well as Anna, I'm going to have to disagree with that, because the St. Louis area is obviously losing a lot of residents recently. And I remember the South City area when we first arrived in the United States wasn't as nice looking as it is today. And I think a lot of the immigrants and refugees picked the area up, beautified it a little bit, opened businesses. And then refugees staying in their homes, a lot of them didn't really have a choice. So it's either you leave your home that's going to be destroyed in 5 minutes by a bomb, or you die. So,
well, I bet you didn't know you're the cause of all these traffic jams we have here, right?
I try to drive carefully.
that's a little over the top for me anyway. Mm-hmm. We had a caller earlier who did not stay with us, and this is an important question, I think, for a lot of folks who are concerned about who's coming into the country. Art wants to know, how do we know they are really refugees? What's the verification process? What we hear a lot about vetting.
Uh-huh. Well, there are, if you go to our website, and it'll be posted on the KWMU website, we have an extensive set of entries that, in fact, provide the details about the 13 vetting steps, which include biometrics and long detailed interviews and that's why it takes 18 to 24 months for them to be able to get over here. FBI, Interpol checks, you know, yada, yada, yada. And you know, I think that if we as Americans were vetted as closely as refugees were, perhaps a whole host of surprises that we seem to find out about each other would not be evident at the last minute. These are among the most vetted, in fact, of foreign-born who come to the United States, not the least. Mm-hmm. You know, in the end, it's all about an analysis of risk. And the reality is that when you look at terrorism in the United States right now, or in Europe, or in other parts of the world, what you're finding is the vast majority of terrorist attacks are actually being perpetrated by people who were born and raised in the country in which the terrorist attack occurs. They are not about outsiders coming to the country and perpetuating terror. And when you look at why these people become terrorists in their country, in many, many cases, we find the same explanations that we find over here for people who use guns in movie theaters or shopping centers, etc., and that are mental health issues, feelings of ostracization, and inadequate mental health services and identification and assistance to these individuals. It's all about the loners at this point in any environment and how they choose then to turn that loneliness into action.
Yeah. Nadim, another issue that I think many people have, we hear it expressed, is that people like you are going to come and take my job or take other people, Americans' jobs, if you will.
Well, when I first arrived in the United States, I was 17 years old. And through the International Institute, I was connected with a community college here at Forest Park. I went to school. I graduated then from UMSL, then SLU Law. And what I did do is I opened up my own law practice. As a matter of fact, my law practice is just now created. What do we have, like 5 or 6 people working with us now? Mm-hmm. So not only did I take away people's jobs, we actually created jobs that were not there prior to our arrival.
That goes back to the entrepreneurial aspect of all
and
this.
And that entrepreneurism, because of that strong entrepreneurism, what happens is communities are more vibrant when they have more immigrants. And there's a study that was out, in fact, in 2011, an economist by the name of Jack Strauss did a study, and it's called, I'll quote it a little bit wrong, but something like African Americans and Latinos, Allies, Not Enemies. And what he showed through crunching numbers on 900 metropolitan areas were that the economy was better and that that African Americans, in this case, made $1 an hour more than they might in commensurate communities because of the vibrancy. And he was able, through a variety of different means, to be able to say that the immigrants that came actually created the vibrancy rather than them being attracted to the vibrancy.
Just sort of departing somewhat from our conversation here, Anna, I'll turn to you first on this. The country is suffering from a case of Islamophobia, to a very large degree. How are we experiencing that in the St. Louis area, or are we?
Well, Nedim, you're a Muslim. How would you?
I'm a Muslim refugee. Has there been fear within the Muslim Bosnian American community? I think a little bit, but you know, not as extreme as some people would think. Obviously, you know, it's not warranted, you know, but
yeah. And one of the things that I think is really inspiring is how some of our longer time refugees, particularly from the Muslim community, but not exclusively, have reached out to some of the recent arrivals to help them with their resettlement process. The Bosnian community, for instance, has been very, very active in being able to reach out a helping hand to the Iraqis and Syrians and Afghans who have been resettled more recently than them, because they realize and value the resettlement experience that was provided to them earlier on. And so that helping hand really stretches the volunteerism, the services, etc., and helps the newcomers integrate more effectively and more quickly than they might otherwise.
And if I may just add to that, what you know, the discussions that I'm having with my Muslim Bosnian American compatriots is, they were a bit baffled by the fact that there's that fear of, you know, the Islamophobia, obviously, but people are not paying so much attention of all the thousands and thousands of people that are being killed by guns every year in the United States, as much as there are to Islamophobia. So it's just no logic to it whatsoever.
I want to point out, as our time begins to wind down, that this is going to be a full day at Left Bank Books, because they're spending the day collecting donations. Why don't you tell us about that, Anna?
Well, Left Bank Books, which is one of our partners today on celebrating World Refugee Day, is actually providing they have three book sessions at 5, 6, and 7 p.m. this evening that tell stories about refugees or or written by refugees. And then as part of that, they are also asking individuals and families who are coming to listen to the speakers to bring donated goods that would benefit the refugees. And so they're asking for, you know, for different kinds of small household items and non-perishable food stuffs, et cetera, that, that would be useful to refugee households. And so it's great because people can reach out and help. We had a wonderful, this morning we had a kickoff at the International Institute for World Refugee Day. And this great little girl from the Tower Grove South neighborhood presented a check for $1,100 that she had raised on Saturday selling lemonade in her neighborhood. Wow. And then it was matched by an anonymous donor. And so we were so overwhelmed that this little fifth grader at this point had taken it upon herself, and it energized her family to help her to do this kind of a thing. So it's really about, you know, about the day is about giving and recognizing. And there are still many ways to be able to do that around the community today.
We'll have information on our website once again that will help. Final thought, Nadim, that you'd like to leave us with?
Refugees need our help. And, you know, it's just every time I look at the image of, I think his name is Iran on, you know, the Turkish coast or that passed
away. The little boy.
The little boy in the red shirt. It just always, you know, brings me choking in tears. And the fact is many, many children out there need our help. And I think we as humanity need to help them out.
Well, that's what we're here for today, is to remind people.
One number, 51% of the refugees worldwide are children under the age of 18. That's generations. The next generation of this world are refugees right now. We need to help them so that they have a fighting chance of helping themselves and their countries.
And that they don't become radicalized somehow. Right. Thank you both so much. Anna Crossland, great to see you again. Thank you for being with us. And Nadim Ramich, great to see you again. Thank you so much for being with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.